signs in the heavens and signs in the earth, nation rising up against nation, and man's love waxing cold. At the center, the two branches of Israel coming together as one, all pointing to the return of the great king, soon, but not yet. Prepare the Way is a program which looks at issues of the day that mainstream media ignores. We face the truth head-on in a world that is determined to tear itself apart. Leading the discussion today is your host, author Daniel Holdings. Now let's prepare the way.
Good evening and welcome to Prepare the Way. I'm Daniel Holdings with a follow-up presentation from last week's show on CERN with Anthony Patch. I received a lot of feedback on that show. For the most part, I heard that the topic was mind-boggling and people didn't know how to put it in perspective of their lives today. So this week's show is another attempt to try to put in perspective the things that are occurring in our very own time that will usher in the second coming of our Messiah. The word says that if Yeshua didn't come back when he did, that there would be no flesh left alive. And oftentimes when we hear that verse, we think it's because there's going to be war or persecution, and certainly all those things are a possibility. But I think there very well may be another angle to this. No flesh left alive. No Yahweh's creation left alive. What do I mean by Yahweh's creation? As an example, when you look into Genesis 6, it talks about the Nephilim and how the Nephilim had corrupted all flesh. And I've heard it said that if they corrupt absolutely all flesh, that they would pollute the bloodline of David, and so therefore the Messiah wouldn't be the Messiah. Now, if you think about the idea that Hasatan hates us, he absolutely hates Yahweh's creation. And he hates the fact that Yeshua was sent to redeem us. So when you think about his attempt in Genesis 6, I hope to lay out a foundation coupled with last week's discussion on CERN that will show you how technology is, in fact, today corrupting Yah's creation. And as a result, the enemy is up to his old tricks and he is involved in this. And you may not know from your daily lives the kind of things that are going on right now with technology, but I think it's very important for us to bring this discussion to the forefront. But before we get to that, for the benefit of our listening audience, I will post all of these articles and interviews on my website, danielholdings.com, for you to go back and take a look at. But let's get to it. I want to talk a little bit about the confluence of events that bring us to this point in time. In recent weeks on PTW, you've heard us talk about the war in Syria. You've heard us talk about the economic collapse. You've heard us talk about several issues that lend us to believe that we are in a time period different than other time periods in human history. So, this first clip has Tom Horn on Skywatch TV discussing some of his work in evaluating what the Mayans meant in 2012 and couple it with biblical prophecy, brought him to this conclusion that we are, in fact, in a different time period than we have ever been before. And so as a consequence, when we go to the next clip after I come back and we begin to talk about technologies that are occurring on the earth today, you will see that all the things that Tom Horn talked about as prophesied and occurring, even through Christian lenses, are pointing to this time. Now, why this time is the point? Because of all the technological issues that are occurring. So, with that introduction, here's Tom Horn on Skywatch TV.
Let's look first briefly at what we think might be happening in the world in 2016. And, you know, we'll clarify here for the benefit of viewers that the only prophecies that we take as guaranteed to be fulfilled are the ones in the Bible.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I wrote the book first called Apollyon Rising, mm-hmm. 2012. Wrote that in 2009. After having really studied what the Chilambala, what the Jaguar Shaman, the writings of the elders that were 500 and some years old that came out of Mayan society were translated into English. I was looking into this at the university level because I really wanted to know, honestly, what did they say? What was it that they believed? And how was this connected to the year 2012? And I came to conclude that what the Maya were saying about the year 2012 was not that that's when the world was going to end. They were saying it was going to be the end of an age and the rollover into a new goal. golden age of humanity. Mm-hmm. And then they said some very interesting things about it. But they were also saying, for instance, that two very powerful men would emerge on Earth following the year 2012. And for the life of me, when I'm studying this, it sounds very much like they're talking about the false prophet and the Antichrist, mm-hmm. right? They also talk about the underworld god, Bolan Yakteku, who in the underworld is guarding the bones of the giants.
Ooh.
But after 2012, those bones will be reanimated and they will reemerge to the surface of the earth. So they were saying some stuff that seemed torn out of the pages of Christian apocalyptic literature, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the world, the return of the end of an age, the return of the giants, these two powerful men that are going to emerge. So I started looking at it through the prism of more Christian eschatological belief systems. And that's when I learned that the Jaguar shaman that the elders, the Mayan elders, were quoting was a convert to Christianity as a result of the Mexican invasion. And he was mixing his Mayan beliefs with Christian end time belief systems. He was putting the two of them together and trying to interpret what the Maya believed based on what he was learning from the missionaries. So I'm out there saying, no, they're not saying this is going to be the end of the world. They're saying this is going to be a new golden age. But then that reminded me of the prophecies that are on the Great Seal of the United States of America with the Kume Sibyl, who was the most powerful of the prophetesses of Apollo, had also prophesied that a time would come, the end of the age. And the more I looked at the Great Seal, the more I recognized that the 13 steps, it all seemed to align with what the Maya were talking about. Mm-hmm. And you could even look at the Great Seal, and I did in the book Apollyon Rising. You could actually translate the Great Seal as saying that something was going to happen between the years 2012 and 2016.
Hmm.
Well, all of a sudden, a guy that works at, it was either Yale University or one of them, he emails me, and we were saying, well, if 2012 gives birth to something, we all said the prophecy of the Pope's going to come to an end. We predicted that Pope Benedict would resign in 2012, which we learned later that he did. Pope Francis is the last pope on that list. So that added kind of another little thing over here, right? Then we get contacted by a university, and they're saying, did you know that literally dozens of turn-of-the-century preachers, including Jonathan Edwards, believed that the Antichrist would appear on Earth between the years 2012 and 2016? We started chronicling that. We did. We wound up with 20-some different magazines that were all printed by reformers in, 200 years ago or so, in which they were saying the Antichrist is going to appear between 2012 and 2016. Tons of them. And then we started finding the Cherokee rattlesnake prophecies. They said the same thing. Orion's going to align, with the certain star clusters and the rattlesnake and their whole thing about, these giant, basically sounds like they're talking about Quetzalcoatl.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The same thing the Maya, the Aztec, Kukulkan. We found a couple of really key documents, the Zohar being one of them. And that came to me. I get this email from J.R. Church. He said, Tom, did you know that in the Zohar, and for people that don't know what that is, that was written like 700 years ago in medieval Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most important books of Jewish Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. All the Orthodox Jewish rabbis pay attention to it. That in there, they said the Messiah would privately arrive on earth in the year 5773, which in our Gregorian calendar was 2012 to 2013.
Yeah.
He'll make himself known to the rabbis, and sometime after that, he'll begin making himself known to the peoples of the world, right? And so he walks me through the Zohar. They said, though, that about the time he makes himself manifest, Rome will be destroyed. Well, then this brought me back to the prophecy of the popes, because the prophecy of the pope says Rome will be destroyed. Fatima describes the bishop in white walking among, a city that's been destroyed and all these dead bodies everywhere. Well, when the final pope is elected, Pope Francis, first thing he does is go to Fatima and he blesses the statuette of Mary. There, he's a believer in the prophecy, right?
Right.
So anyway, bits and pieces everywhere, all coming together, pointing to this period of time. Well, Orthodox Jews in Israel over the last month have been saying the Messiah is here. He's getting ready to make himself known to the people of the world. That's right out of the Zohar. So
we're seeing prophecies coming from the Islamic world, from the Hadiths, projecting a cataclysmic or climactic final battle in northern Syria, which is in the area right now where the struggle is taking place, not far from Aleppo, which the Syrian government is fighting along with Russian and Iranian forces to try to take back from rebel groups that the United States has been supporting with Turkey and other NATO allies. We're fighting a proxy war in that very area that the Islamic State and other radical Sunni Mahdists believe that the Mahdi will appear believes that their battle is going to that's going to propel them to establish a global caliphate.
I anticipate there could be some literal earth-shaking things that are going to happen.
Amen.
But it's important to know what these other people believe their prophecies are teaching them, because what a person believes dictates how they live. And so we can draw some conclusions about what groups like the Islamic State might do based on what prophecies they believe in.
Right.
So that was Tom Horn on Skywatch TV talking about the confluence of events that have led us to this time period, 2016. So what does 2016 hold for us? Well, I would propose to you that at the same time that you have a confluence of events, you have technology that is pushing mankind to the edge of the abyss as well. Because right now, there are five technologies that we are going to discuss that will absolutely stun you. Not necessarily in this order, but the first is quantum computing. What is quantum computing? Generally speaking, the way a computer thinks is based upon zeros and ones. And all the answers that you see on the computer in our modern age are based upon this idea that a computer can factor zero and one. Well, quantum computing is a breakthrough in that it can give multiple answers beyond zero and one. And what this does is it makes answers that would normally take a supercomputer thousands of years to answer, it lets them answer it in hours. So it is amazing the kind of things that quantum computing will do. We are not quite there, but there are lots of indicators that we are just about there. So when that switch flips, you're going to see a jump in technology like never before. Now, why should this be an issue? Because I want to talk about something else. You've all heard the phrase artificial intelligence. There have been movies on artificial intelligence, and there's this idea of singularity where computers surpass humans in their thought processes. And so it is, in many people's opinion, it poses a grave danger to our society and mankind in general. The next issue that I want to talk about is robotics. You know, it's a funny thing. When we talk about robotics, you automatically think about the Terminator, especially when you couple that with artificial intelligence. However, the big brains of our modern era are very concerned about robotics and the unification of that with artificial intelligence. As an example, Stephen Hawking, the premier thinker of our time, is very concerned about killer robots that will take over the Earth. And I'm not making this stuff up. Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, has also voiced grave concern about these issues, as well as others individuals. So we're going to take a hard look at robotics, especially coupled with artificial intelligence. That'll take us into the discussion of transhumanism and what it means for the human being to be technologically enhanced. That's right, technologically enhanced. And they do it in multiple ways. They do it with technology being embedded in the body, chips in the head, or other things in your body to make you stronger, faster, whatever the case may be. Or they can do it with DNA. And so the last issue that we'll be talking about tonight is genetic manipulation or DNA manipulation. And again, these issues, they all blur together in so many areas. So this next clip is a documentary that was done about transhumanism, and it is called The Scary Thing About Transhumanism. There are some familiar voices in here. Chuck Misler's in here as an example, and other well-known thinkers of our time, as well as other promoters of transhumanism, whose position that you have to hear in order to really understand where they're coming from. So here's the clip.
We are going to become gods. Period. If you don't like it, get off. You don't have to contribute. You don't have to participate. But if you're going to interfere with me becoming God, you're going to have big trouble. Then we'll have warfare. If you kill me, I'll kill you.
The next great American project, and that's what we're calling the Brain Initiative,
is the whole area of artificial intelligence. Or some people would express it, the simulation of cognitive behavior. But the fact that software can learn.
You know, as humans, we can identify galaxies light years away. We can study particles smaller than an atom, but we still haven't unlocked the mystery of the 3 pounds of matter that sits between our ears. And the Brain Initiative will change that by giving scientists the tools they need to respond to our thoughts.
There are contracts being granted in research to have goals such as a squad leader being able to communicate with his team by thought. people who have been tracking these four technologies are familiar with this tide of interest in the direction of transhumanism. In fact, every technology that I think we know about is at the horizon of the information sciences. The real breakthroughs in microbiology are in the information sciences. The real breakthroughs in subatomic particles is in the information sciences. It's the information sciences that bounds our world. So what has emerged here is a goal of what some people call transhumanism, trying to extend the capacity of the human being. What most people don't realize is there is an arms race going on between the major powers for the super soldier, something that's beyond human. That's the goal, and that sounds bizarre only to the uninformed.
We are now becoming the objects of conscious design, and the implications of that are just enormous. Because until now, we've been reshaping the world around us, and we can see how dramatically it's been changing. I mean, we've really reshaped the landscape, and we've built a society and altered society and changed everything that's external to us. But somehow we imagined that we were going to remain the same, that we ourselves were not going to be caught up in this process. And that's not, in fact, true. We are going to remake ourselves, and it's very difficult to deal with because it will rip free all of the anchors that have until now told us who we are as human beings.
This body is not sacred. The way we are is not some kind of God-given plan. It's really a pure random accident. We take two sets of genes and we shuffle them and something comes out. Sometimes it's a wonderful product, sometimes it has a hole in the heart, sometimes it has psychosis or tendencies towards extreme anger, has addictive problems, can't concentrate, all kinds of defects. To say, oh, that's normal, that's sacred, that's good, to me is rather absurd. It's random, there's not a plan there that we're thwarting. So genetic engineering seems to be one of the most moral things we can do.
A single species is defined by the isolation of our genetics, reproductive isolation. But when you begin to take genes from different species to mix together all of the genetics that is available among all animals, and also to design new alterations to the genetics, well, reproductive isolation really doesn't have much meaning anymore. And so you can imagine all sorts of forms and that will evolve in the future. Our future is not to try and hold back genetic engineering, but to try and use it in a way that best serves us. If our children can be more intelligent and healthier and live longer lives through altering our genetics, why would we not want to do it? I mean, imagine if other children could live for 2 centuries, and if you could only live for 80 years because your parents believed that it was improper to tamper with human genetics. You would not be pleased with that decision. The same thing if your IQ were a normal IQ and all of your classmates were much, much brighter because there had been sort of some biological or genetic manipulation that was possible. You'd feel very angry about that.
We are shifting to a transhuman base. We've come out of a humanist time, and now we're redefining what it is to be human. We have the opportunity now to try to do things better than nature has done.
Why not have a stronger arm than we have? Why not be able to run faster? Why not be able to have tougher skins?
If you're going to replace your eye for vision, why limit it to visual? Why not give it the kind of vision a bat has? Give it ultrasound.
We really, really do want to violate human limits now, and we're getting closer and closer to the ability to do it.
Plans to allow scientists to create embryos that are part human and part animal are set for approval by the official regulator in Britain. These hybrid embryos are seen by the country's leading scientists as a vital step in the search for cures for diseases such as Parkinson's and Alzheimer's.
You could design your baby's features, would you? According to LA's Fertility Institute, prospective parents can select eye color, hair color, and more.
I would predict that by next year we will have determined sex with 100% certainty on a baby, and we will have determined eye color with about an 80% accuracy rate. I think it's very important that we not bury our heads in the sand and pretend that these advances aren't happening.
Now, if your mouth is hanging open because you've never heard these kind of issues discussed, I would not blame you if you thought that this was merely science fiction. But the fact is that these are technologies that are being employed right now. And many of the voices that you heard on that clip are some of the most brilliant minds of our times in the scientific community, which reminds me of a phrase that Anthony Patch used when it came to the scientists at CERN. He used the phrase hubris, that the scientists were hubris enough to think that they could do whatever they wanted to do. I would say that it is the same hubris that you've heard in the voices of the people that were on that clip. Anthony mentioned Kronos and this whole occultic philosophy, or religion really, of these scientists that believed they could get to Saturn and that they were followers of the god Kronos and that they could influence time or change time. And again, if you never heard that before, you were probably sitting back going, this is really crazy. How could these really smart people think this way? Well, you just heard other really smart people, both in the science and medical communities, think the very same way. This is hubris at its finest. And it boils down to the fact, just as that first gentleman on the clip said, that we will be gods. Now, what was the biggest lie in the garden? Satan told Eve, you will be like gods. And it's the old lie that we still fall for today. Now, this is another clip from another movie, a documentary coming out called Inhuman. It's really good, and I would encourage you to take a look at it.
One of the challenges for transhumanists is to push forward an idea that comes out of the Enlightenment, which is that what gives us moral standing, or what's significant about being a human being and alive, is that we're a self-conscious, subjective being. Humanity has the right and obligation to take rational control of its own destiny and to improve its welfare through reason and science. The challenge is that as we begin to do that in ways that move beyond the constraints of being human, become live longer than humans traditionally have more cognitive abilities, have more physical abilities than humans traditionally have, that it's no longer humanism, it's something beyond humanism. And so that meaning is that we're transcending humanism, or humanism that transcends itself.
The question of whether transhumanism is a religion or even an old form of religion is interesting. And from a Christian perspective, you know, I think it's fair to argue that we're really seeing the original lie that the serpent fed to Eve in the garden, that you will be like God.
Even some transhumanists have said, yes, this replaces what religion has always given people. That is the idea of hope, the idea of believing in something bigger than ourselves. And if you're a pure materialist, which transhumanism really is a purely materialist viewpoint, there is no hope unless you can find something that could replace what religion used to supply.
When we look at human enhancement through a religious view, we get into who's playing God. You know, isn't this God's position, or someone of a higher order, depending on the various religious views, that it's not our right to do this, that we have to stand by and let a greater voice or a greater mind or an intelligence do this for us. On the other side of that, if you look at the spirituality aspect of it, if the spiritual nature of us is to find peace and communion and higher consciousness, then it would make sense that we would want to enhance ourselves and help others enhance themselves, because that's paying it forward.
If we were created beings, would God want us to stay children forever? Or wouldn't he want us to become more wise and more like him in order to understand the divine purpose and join in that divine purpose? You know, a child can't help with the goals of the parent in a very competent way, but a grown-up child can. And so when are we going to grow up, and how are we going to grow up? And I think transhumanism might be one of the ways Christians eventually figure out that they could grow up.
What does it really mean to be human?
Suddenly, people who have all along considered themselves to be normal find themselves no longer being considered good enough.
People will do anything to their bodies for social enhancement.
We have these technological developments. They're not inevitable. We have to really look at them carefully and make decisions.
Mark 13:20 says this, "Unless the Lord shortened those days, no life would have been saved. But for the sake of the elect whom he chose, he shortened the days." Could it be that this technology is such a danger to Yahweh's creation that all of the prophetic events that we see converging at this particular time in human history have been orchestrated to save mankind? So when we get back from the break, we're going to to discuss three other technologies that could potentially cause such great harm to his creation that he has stopped them. We're going to talk about quantum computing. We're going to talk about robotics and artificial intelligence. And again, not necessarily in the same order, but blending together into this mosaic of danger that should register in all of our dashboards. You're listening to Prepare the Way. I'm Daniel Holdings. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Prepare the Way. I'm Daniel Holdings, and we are in the midst of an important discussion on five technologies that threaten mankind today. This is not science fiction, folks. This is stuff that is going on in laboratories as we speak, and they are so important that I thought, as a follow-up to the conversation that we had last week on CERN, that we needed to address them now. You know, many people say that it's going to be years, decades, before Messiah comes back. And I would submit to you that as a consequence of these technologies that threaten Yahweh's creation, that simply could not be the case. That if Adonai did not come back to put a stop to what mankind is doing to his creation, that there would in fact be no flesh left alive. And so, when you look at the confluence of events that are going on around the world, seemingly coming to a head, and various voices of Christian prophets, Hebraic prophets, Rabbinic prophets, talking about how Messiah's return is imminent, I think it certainly is an indication that because we have entered in a different season of human history, that the Father is about to intervene with the return of Messiah. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's tomorrow, the next day, or next week. The show is Prepare the Way, and my goal is to give you that information that helps you to prepare for the return of our soon coming King. So with that, before we go on to quantum computing, robotics, and other technologies that we are going to talk about, I wanted to finish up this discussion on transhumanism, i.e. eugenics and genetic engineering. They are absolutely mind-blowing, but folks, it is real, and I want you to understand what we are looking at. I'm going to play two clips for you back to back, and then we'll come back and talk about them. Here they are.
You've stated quite explicitly that humankind as it is not fit for the future, is unfit, which is a kind of dangerous word.
Well, just to take one example, 1% of the human population are psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
That means there's around 70 million psychopaths in the world. Now, very soon we'll be able to construct biological weapons in a backyard laboratory, mm-hmm. create smallpox in a backyard laboratory. So you don't need to be an expert in maths to realize there's a significant risk there. Humans are naturally selfish, free riders, have limited levels of altruism. And so my idea is that we need to look at human, not just physical or health or cognitive limitations, but also our moral limitations in order to deal with the challenges that rapid advances in technology and globalization create for us. So if you look at the people who are against enhancing human beings, mm-hmm. all of them accept the use of science to treat disease, mm-hmm. but they draw a bright line between disease and enhancing normal human beings. And this is, I think, really a pre-scientific view of nature and the evolution of human beings. They either believe there's something intrinsically good in nature, or they believe that we're made in the image of God. And I don't think that's good. And I think if we can change it, we should decide to change it for the better. My arguments about selecting the best children apply to in vitro fertilization, artificial reproduction. What happens today in countries like Holland, United Kingdom, Australia, you can test for major diseases. Mm. In my view, that's a good thing. I think we ought to select the embryo which doesn't have a major genetic disorder. Some people disagree with that. But in addition, you'll be able to select for things like disposition to impulsive criminal behavior, mm-hmm. dispositions to higher cognitive ability. If I said, you know, to you, look, you know, take this vitamin and your child will be smarter, you take the vitamin. What's the difference between a vitamin and gene therapy? Both of them act on your biology. That's why they have an effect. The difference is two. One is that gene therapy is likely to be more risky. And secondly, it's passed on to the next generation.
Yes.
This is much more radical because you can, in principle, create any level of capacity or modification. With genetic selection, you're just limited by what a couple would naturally produce. All you're doing is selecting something that nature could have produced. Gene therapy, on the other hand, can produce beings which could never naturally exist. Mm. So it vastly increases the scope for human modification. Well, I don't think we should be banning choices and banning people, you know, restricting freedom unless people are harming others. I think this is a very basic, and it's increasingly under threat as certain moralists and certain moral values dictate how we should live. And I think we're giving up too much freedom. So you could be having not just the child that naturally you'd produce, but one that you would be very unlikely, except over many hundreds of lifetimes, to produce. So this means that you could have quite significantly genetically advantaged children. Importantly, natural reproduction is pretty bad. It's ineffective and unsafe. It won't be very long before artificial reproduction has much better figures than natural reproduction. So the move to a much greater use of artificial reproduction is inevitable just because natural reproduction is so bad. But we can't just assume that what we have now is somehow matched to our values and what we ought to be aiming at, because it's just the production of brute evolution.
But here's MIT Technology Review. This is propaganda. All the rest of what we look at is window dressing. Human-animal chimeras are gestating on U.S. research farms. And then I knew what the next line would be. They're growing human tissue in cows and pigs, just like they call babies tissue or embryonic stem cells when they're 7 months old being butchered live on a table and dissected. They take them out live and then hook them up to apparatus to keep them alive and then harvest them. Told you that 20 years ago. Now it's mainstream news. It's always the same playbook. Oh, did you know some firms are starting to implant tissue inside cows, inside pigs? Ladies and gentlemen, they're not implanting tissue. They're growing humanoids up to 50 and 60 pounds inside cows and inside pigs. And I'm going to say something else right now. That's what we know was going on 30 years ago, because when I learned about it 20 years ago, it was in research papers declassified 10 years before that.
I know. Many of you are pulling yourselves off the floor thinking, did he really just say that? That first clip was from the Perfect Human series, and being interviewed was the Australian philosopher and bioethnicist Julian Savulescu. Julian is a true believer in the eugenics or the transhumanism campaign. Those things that he said were absolutely what he thinks, what he desires, what he wants, and what he actually is involved in on a regular basis. And then, of course, the next clip after that was Alex Jones on InfoWars, and the crazy stuff that he was talking about chimeras. Folks, this is absolutely true. This is absolutely going on. And as a consequence, is it any wonder that mankind has lost their mind? We are just doing whatever we set our minds to, just as they did in the Tower of Babel. And as a consequence, is it too much longer before Elohim steps in and says enough? So, moving on from there, we are going to begin a discussion on quantum computing, on artificial intelligence, and robotics. Now, all of these three issues kind of wrap all together because they all depend on one another. So, let's first start with quantum computing. So what is quantum computing? Quantum computing is based on quantum bits or qubits. Unlike traditional computers in which bits have either a zero or a one value, a qubit can represent a zero, a one, or both values simultaneously. So the options are opened up. Representing information in qubits allows the information to be processed in ways that have no equivalent in classical computing, taking advantage of phenomena such as quantum tunneling and quantum entanglement. As such, quantum computers may theoretically be able to solve certain problems in a few days that would take millions of years on a classical computer. In an article dated December 9, 2015 by Mark Molloy in the UK Telegraph, the headline reads, "Google's new quantum computer is 100 times faster than your PC." Google and NASA have been working on a lightning-fast quantum computer that is 36 times faster than a supercomputer at solving complex problems. Has Google won the race to build the world's first commercial quantum computer? The technology company's artificial intelligence lab believe that they may have proof that their option-dividing quantum computer actually works. Google and NASA announced they were collaborating on the D-Wave X2 quantum computer, which they say is 100 million times faster than a conventional computer chip in 2013. It can answer certain algorithms in seconds rather than years. Google Director of Engineering, Hemant Nevin, said, "For specific carefully crafted proof of concept problem, we achieved 100 million fold speed up." According to Engadget, the computer figures to be the most effective overall course of action to complete a task when given a set of options, which could be in the development of the next generation artificial intelligence. Skeptics have questioned if the computer actually taps into the quantum physics to solve these problems, but now Google and NASA say they have proof. Now, get this. The quote is, "It is a truly disruptive technology that could change how we do everything," said Deepak Biwas, director of exploration at NASA's Ames Research Center in California. So the thing that I want you to take away from that article is the fact that we are right there. We are at the precipice of changing how everything works. When, not if, quantum computing happens within the next year, year and a half, you are going to see such a leap in technology and a change in society that will absolutely blow your mind. And this leads us to our next point of information regarding artificial intelligence. Now, currently, artificial intelligence like Siri on your Apple phone has to do with just basic type computing. When, in fact, quantum computers become available to the public, everything will change. It'll be Star Trek or even more wild than that. So this is the reason why we are at this precipice where we could literally destroy ourselves. Because you're going to hear about the threat that artificial intelligence poses, and imagine that it comes online with quantum computing at its core. So I want you to really let that sink in for a second, because right now everything is about to change. Let's hear next clip.
You've gone to this international conference being held in Austin, Artificial Intelligence Open House, but you talked to some of the top artificial intelligence professors. You talked to the author of Artificial Intelligence, the book that was turned into a movie. Give me your take on this, because they're talking about being able to stop the AI anti-human takeover of Tyrannus. That's the BAE system, the aircraft that kills people and makes its own decisions. That's what all this is going to, but we still have time to stop it, don't we, Leanne?
Absolutely. And that was kind of my takeaway from that experience. That is actually a great thing, because these systems, this malevolent takeover that science fiction is basically warning us is going to happen, isn't here just yet. It is a part of our human evolution. You know, that's what humans do.
We supposedly try to control our environment and build the environment we want. The Western elite want an artificially intelligent computer to map reality through smart dirt or chips and everything to then control and surveil everything. That is here. Mm-hmm. What's not here is the killer robots on the ground, but we're only a few years away from that.
Well, this clip, I'm speaking with Dr. Stuart Russell. He wrote the book Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach.
They've now come out with basically killer robots. They fire a shotgun burst at you, or they have a handgun built inside of them, and it comes in your house and kills you. DARPA released that 2 years ago. They have drones that fly over and release 100, and they actually have these now, little pods that come down and surveil you and shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is really happening. Yeah. And believe me, I talked to a Marine Corps colonel 16 years ago that said, look, the robots you're seeing are nothing. It's an 18-wheeler that pulls up that's a robot. And out of it rolls off, you know, a whole bunch of wheeled killer robots that just, it doesn't matter if it takes them 5 minutes to climb your stairs. They go in, they blow up your door, they come in, and they roll in and they kill you. And then now, of course, they've shown us all that. I mean, basically, they have things that are like F-150 pickups that are battle-hardened that look like a cartoon. They've got so many guns and weapons on them, and then that's what you're facing.
Right.
It's robot planes, it's robot cars. It's not going to be Homo sapien-looking robots.
Right, and he was actually saying that it's even more, it's going to be even more frightening than that, building this robot army. That doesn't even make sense. What they would do could take out a country in a day, simply.
Well, sure, it's a robot brains that go in and jack into all the communications, or even if they hardwire stuff not to be hooked into the grid, they simply deploy robot drones that are like smart meters that hover in, attach, hack the system at the point, and then take it over.
Right, he said it could.
You could have one robot per city take over.
He said 2 seconds, decimate the civilian population.
Google's plan at the beginning was to build an AI supercomputer to control reality.
The AI that we have is like Siri or like Google, where what it is it's kind of taking all this data and figuring out how to be a more perfect source of information.
We are building the AI. It is us.
Exactly. That's how it learns. That's how the robots learn, is they observe us and they see what's beneficial to us.
My God, we're building robots that are like us. We're really Here's part of our interview with Dr. Stuart Russell.
There is a reason to be concerned in the long term, because the direction that AI has been going, and not just AI, control theory, operations researcher, other disciplines aimed exactly the same thing, producing the capability of making high quality. What's the objective? So it's using lots of information, it's looking far ahead in the future, that's great. What's the objective that it's trying to achieve? If that objective is not perfectly aligned with the values of us humans, then that creates the possibility for bad to happen. We have to make sure the values of the machine are aligned with the value of race.
Who gets to decide what is positively beneficial? We are on the precipice of a decision that is going to alter the course of humanity for all time. This AI, it's going to happen. AI has a future. It's here. It's just the question is, what is the future for humanity?
And are we going to be involved in that, or just let the globalists build a nightmare system, which they are building, an anti-human computer grid and training the robots to exterminate us autonomously?
Is there any way to control some that are already growing?
I think the issue of autonomous weapons is a very immediate one, in some ways much more immediate than the kinds we've just been talking. It's a mistake to think just about replacing current functions that are done by humans with machines. So right now we have drones, but the targeting decisions are made by a human who is getting the remote video feed from the drone, and the human identifies the target and the human pulls the trigger. And so people are talking about, is it acceptable to replace that particular function with a computer program? The reason I think it's a mistake is because it assumes that everything remains the same, that we just replace an existing human function with an algorithm or machine and nothing else changes. But in fact, if you have autonomous weapons, you're going to have an arms race of autonomous weapons.
All right, your eyes are rolling and you're thinking, oh, that's just Alex Jones. He's given to dramatics. However, I want you to listen to the next four clips to people who are considered much more serious than he.
From Tesla to the Hyperloop, Elon Musk certainly isn't scared to build futuristic technologies. But when it comes to artificial intelligence, Musk is sounding the alarm. Speaking at a symposium at MIT, he cautions that the technology could be a threat and needs some regulatory oversight. Here's the quote. He says, quote, "With artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon. In all those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, it's like, yeah, he's sure he can control the demon. Doesn't work out," end quote. Of course, he has raised the specter of artificial intelligence without going much further. We know that it's on his radar, though.
Nothing in technology scares me more than Elon Musk scaring me on artificial intelligence. He's the guy who should not be afraid.
Damon here with IGN Science News. Professor Stephen Hawking has spoken out about the possible dire consequences of developing advanced artificial intelligence. In a recent interview with the BBC, Hawking stated that creating machines capable of thinking and learning on a level that matches or even surpasses that of an average human being could spell the end of humanity. According to Hawking, our modern primitive versions of AI have been largely helpful and influential in millions of lives, but it's the unlimited and unexplored realm of AI that poses significant issues due to its ability to grow and evolve unencumbered by the factors that affect humans. Hawking warned, humans, who are limited by slow biological evolution, couldn't compete and would be superseded.
My name is Mitch, and this is IGN News. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak has always supported technological advances, but he's starting to recognize the potential dangers of artificial superintelligence. Basically, Steve Wozniak is afraid of the singularity. Wozniak said in an interview with the Australian Financial Review, quote, "Computers are going to take over from humans, no question," adding that he was initially skeptical of theories from futurists that machine intelligence will surpass humans within the next 30 years. Wozniak's opinions about AI follow from other influential leaders in the tech fields. Bill Gates, Tesla CEO Elon Musk, and Professor Stephen Hawking have previously expressed concerns about the possible dire consequences of developing advanced AI, and that humanity needs to be more cautious with the future of its development.
Billionaire entrepreneur and real-life Tony Stark, Elon Musk, is making headlines with an ominous tweet about the dangers of artificial intelligence. Musk tweeted Saturday, "Worth reading, Superintelligence by Bostrom. We need to be super careful with AI, potentially more dangerous than Nuke." The first half of that tweet refers to Nick Bostrom, a Swedish philosopher who's written extensively about artificial intelligence and his book, Superintelligence, Paths, Dangers, Strategies. In that context, it seems like Musk comes down on the hurt us side of that debate with his comparison to nukes. And CNET pointed out, this isn't the first time Musk has voiced his concerns about the future of AI.
I'd like to just keep an eye on what's going on with artificial intelligence. I think there's potentially a dangerous outcome there. There's been movies about this, you know, like Terminator.
Yes, Musk also comes down on the negative side of the idea, the merger of human and machine, tweeting, "Hope we're not just the biological bootloader for digital superintelligence. Unfortunately, that is increasingly probable." So from Musk's perspective, it seems if we're not careful, we're looking at one of two options. Either superintelligent future robots wage war to annihilate humanity, la Terminator, or superintelligent future robots enslave humanity and use us as a battery, like in The Matrix. For Newsy, I'm Megan Judy.
All right, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking, and Steve Wozniak all have grave concerns about AI. So you may be sitting there thinking, why? Why is all this going on? Why should I be concerned? What's the big deal? Well, our final clip for the evening is going to explain some of that, and hopefully it'll put into perspective in kind of a dramatic way the kind of things that we are facing and why our Messiah needs to return.
The elite just everywhere in their white papers just laugh and just say, try to stop us. We'll step on you like a bug. And then people want me to fight with them over what color they are, or that I'm closed-minded because I don't like an old Olympic athlete in drag. I just don't care. It's a weapon system to psychologically distract us from the scientific, technological, military takeover taking place. The humans are all going to be replaced in the military in the next 10 to 15 years. They're going to implode the military, which has had its own problems, but at least was a human institution. They're destroying the family successfully. They're destroying our health. They're destroying our physical IQ. They are annihilating everyone right now. I mean, we're watching people being torn to pieces in slow motion. And so all this other news is just window dressing. But just in my stacks today, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, there's like eight different articles announcing how ugly and bad humans are and how much better we'll be when we're all dead. That's their philosophy being projected onto us, so we lay down. And other articles about how, yes, they've already got life extension, but we can't give it to the general public. And then you look at the elites, who they are. They're very wicked, evil, hateful people. And I don't know how I'm not supposed to just talk about this, because this is what's really going on. Why do I call it a giant Manhattan Project? David Rockefeller famously in 1991 in Evian, France, and this was released to the BBC, thanked the media for keeping their Organization for World Government secret and said our goals would have been impossible if we would have had the light of publicity on it. But now the end of the nation state and the end of individual determination is over, and the dawn of a world government run by policymakers and international bankers is now here. I mean, go read his quote. I mean, do you understand? This guy founded over 100 world government organizations. The Carnegie, the Ford, the Rockefeller foundations are all under their control, and everything you see being done is from them. Microsoft, IBM, all of it, everything, the global rollout, global standardization, it's been decided by them. And I guess people just want to be ruled in a sci-fi nightmare, taken over, dumbed down, and then euthanized by these people while they openly drink wine and go, ah, baby parts, Lamborghinis, ah. That's how ubiquitous this is. All of it is designed to undermine the individual. This is the globalist system. And there is a giant quasi-secret planetary government being established. And people don't ask, what's the philosophy of the world government? Well, they go, and this has been declassified. We've had insiders on. We've had historians from Congress on. The general public are a bunch of scum. We're going to save the earth by bringing in a global tyranny, a global authoritarianism, and you're going to be part of the leadership of it. That's very alluring, and most people go along with it. And that's where we are today. And then as you get higher up in it, into the 6,000 superclass estimated by the Kissinger Group, and I agree with that number, then you're led into the larger design of basically total exterminism, Luciferianism. We are gods. We are merging with the machines to transcend, and the profane do not deserve to transcend. And so we must see a falling away, a culling. They funded the science of the total takeover. They run the whole system, and they make money off global flesh and organ trafficking, narcotics trafficking. They own, it's their planet, it's their club, and you and I, as George Carlin said, ain't in it. The owners don't want you thinking, but how do you then get that information to the public that doesn't want to believe it? But see, they tell the general public, oh, there's no such thing as God or the devil. But then you study globalists, they themselves are seriously occultic, to a man, to a woman, and they believe they serve the God of this world, who is the real Christ, who is going to deliver them with technology and make them live forever with heaven on earth. They are a whacked out eugenics, proto-Nazi, neo-eugenics death cult. And then I look at what the UN and the globalists push. It's basically the same thing. We're all going to drink Kool-Aid and then go to the mothership. We're going to join with the world government and then we're going to live forever. No, you're not. It's a giant deception. How do you get people to join with the devil, to join with death, to join with a God that wants to kill everybody on the earth, to save the earth as you merge with machines and become gods? Right here, the Genesis Engine, Wired Magazine, special report, It's like 30 pages long. We now have the power to quickly and easily alter DNA. It could eliminate disease. It could solve world hunger. It could provide unlimited clean energy. It could really get out of hand. By Amy Waxman. It needs to be specially controlled, the life extension. And then once deployed to the public, we'll have Trojan horses in it and will not be the real grail. Because just as the elite are betrayed by their masters and their master, they do the same trick to those below them, and then that group betrays those below them as well. As above, so below. I don't believe it. I know it.
So what's the point of all this, Daniel? Is it just sensationalism that you brought to the table this evening to entertain us? No, not in the least. Yeshua said in Matthew 24 that when he returned, it would be as in the days of Noah. When you understand that Nimrod was a contemporary of Noah, and that they were building the Tower of Babel at that time, and that great flood was a result of mankind turning his heart away from God, then you and I are living in a very unique time, because except for the technology, except for the style of clothes and some of the customs in America, it looks a lot like now. And so the point is this: we need to step back, we need to pray, and we need to seek the Lord with all our hearts to make sure that we are being that salt and light that he has called us to, because look up, for our redemption is near. I'm Daniel Holdings. You've been listening to Prepare the Way. Until next week, shalom.